Oh, it's time. It's time to begin. It is January 14th, 2024 of the Common Era, 1923 hours Eastern Standard Time. Ward Green with you again. 1923 being in the BCE years, the year of the beginning of the rule of Joseph as second in command of Egypt in the genealogy, and also in the Common Era, 1923 of our era, was the year of the first constitution of Egypt in the modern day. Remarkable coincidence of those numbers again. We see that the genealogy is Jehovah's chronology because it makes things superior, easy in all respects, or in so many respects, to remember everything, with the numbers being correlated. And we didn't contrive any of that. That was just, I didn't do anything. It just, as I discovered each date in the chronology, I learned more and found more things. And as I wasn't sure of any of my dates, of course, but then when I saw these corresponding dates, mirror dates, I became more convinced it must be the correct chronology because Jehovah allowed it to coincide with mirror dates on the opposite side of the Common Era. The Pharaoh of the Exodus in C-cubed Crucible of Credible Creed, our article, chapter 4, paragraph 11, had a firstborn child who had died the night before. The night before the Exodus, Pharaoh's son died, according to the Bible, as we read in Exodus chapters 11. 11 through 12, 11 and 12. Grief-stricken, a military pharaoh who loses a military son, this seems so right, might be expected to respond in a military way, attacking. Doesn't that seem to be correct? This was a rare thing. I mean, not every pharaoh is a military pharaoh. Not every pharaoh is like a military man before he becomes a pharaoh. But this pharaoh was, in our chronology, the pharaoh of the Exodus has to be Thutmose. He's military. Does Amenmose, who's the son of Thutmose, appear to be the firstborn son of Scripture? Well, based on that, he does, doesn't he? Because he was military, his father was military. He was killed in the plague, according to the chronology, which tells us he must have been the one, because he was the one at that time who was the firstborn of the Pharaoh. And the Bible tells us the firstborn of all Egyptians were eliminated. They all died on that same night before the Exodus. I mean, it's in chapter 11 and 12 of Exodus. To read that is what you need to do if you haven't read that. And the other question that we ask here is Thutmose I the very bad king who was drowned, which is the title of our chapter? Does that prove it? It seems to indicate some pretty good evidence in favor of Thutmose I having been the king who was the pharaoh of the Exodus. I mean, it wouldn't be possible to find that out if we didn't have a chronology. We wouldn't know which pharaoh to look at. We wouldn't be inclined to be favoring one pharaoh over another one. We'd have nothing to go by. But we've got our chronology. We have the chronology that indicates what the time period was, and therefore that indicates, when we know the chronology of the Egyptian pharaohs, and people have studied this at great length, then we know, based on the date, who the king was. And that's what we did in our chronology. And not everybody has the same chronology, but this is Jehovah's chronology. That's what we are suggesting. And, you know, isn't it? I mean, is it not an incredible, a wonderful chronology with very strong underpinnings and very strong clues about its truthfulness? So Proverbs 13, little children, verse 12 is our proverb for today. Expectation postponed is making the heart sick, but the thing desired is the tree of life when it does come. I waited a long time in my life to find the chronology. I didn't expect I'd ever find the chronology of the Bible, but I wanted to know what it was, the chronology of the Bible, for a very long time. I wanted to know when exactly these things happened. And I know that because otherwise I wouldn't have searched for it. Once the internet became a big enterprise and people were able to find information from so many different libraries and so many different research books, or on so many different topics from so many different research sources, I should say, not just books, but articles and many different sources, but some of them were books, of course, but documented online, these books that were available, and I didn't pay for any of the information. I made sure to make it a practice that everything I found, everything I obtained, was obtained free of charge. That was my decision that I made. I didn't want to pay. I wouldn't pay for anything. I refused to make it a commercial thing. The truth, I wanted the truth to be free of any financial burden and anything like that, and to be made available to everybody for free as well. Let's do our reading from 1 Kings. It's 19? 20? What is it? 20. How come I didn't see it there? I know it's there. It's got to be. There it is. As for Ben-Hadad, the king of Syria, we've got a lot of reading to do today. We've got to move on. As for Ben-Hadad, the king of Syria, chapter 20, verse 1, little children, he collected all his military forces together and also 32 kings with him. All his military forces together and also 32 kings with him, and horses and chariots. And he proceeded to go up and lay siege to Samaria and fight against it. Then he sent messengers to Ahab, the king of Israel, at the city. And that's where Ahab was, at Samaria. And he went on to say to him, "This is what Ben-Hadad has said. Your silver and your gold are mine, and your wives and your sons, the best looking, are mine." Rather arrogant, wasn't it? To this the king of Israel answered and said, "According to your word, my lord the king, yours I am with all that belongs to me." So King Ahab was rather humble. Later the messengers came back and said, "This is what Ben-Hadad has said. I sent to you saying, your silver and your gold and your wives and your sons you will give to me. But about this time tomorrow I shall send my servants to you, and they must carefully search your house and the houses of your servants. And it must occur that everything desirable to your eyes they will put in their hand, and they must take it away." At that the king of Israel called all the older men of the land and said, "Take note, please, and see that it is calamity that this one is seeking. For he sent to me for my wives and my sons and my silver and my gold, and I did not hold them back from him." Then all the older men and all the people said to him, "Do not obey, and you should not consent." So he said to the messengers of Ben-Hadad, "Say to my lord the king, all that you sent to your servant at first I shall do, but this thing I am not able to do." So he was a man of his word. He kept his word that he had given the first time. Even though he was a wicked king of Israel, it shows that all the Israelites were, in their hearts, they were truthful people. Honest. With that, the messengers went off and brought word back to him, back to Ben-Hadad. Ben-Hadad now sent to him, Ahab, and said, "So may the gods do to me, and so may they add to it, if the dust of Samaria will be sufficient for handfuls for all the people that follow me." He was going to grab it up. In turn, the king of Israel answered and said, "You men, speak to him. Do not let one girding on boast about himself like one unfastening." And it came about that as soon as he heard this word, while he himself and the kings were drinking in the booths, he immediately said to his servants, "Get set." And this is Ben-Hadad. And they began to get set against the city. And look, a certain prophet approached Ahab, the king of Israel, and said, "This is what Jehovah has said. Have you seen all this great crowd? here I am giving it into your hand today, and you will certainly know that I am Jehovah. Talking about the Syrian army. Then Ahab said, by whom? To which he said, this is what Jehovah has said, by the young men of the princes of the jurisdictional districts. Finally he said, who will open the battle engagement? To which he said, you. And he proceeded to take the count of the young men of the princes of the jurisdictional districts, and they came to be 232. And after them he took the count of all the people, all the sons of Israel, 7,000. And they began to go out at noon, while Ben-Hadad was drinking himself drunk in the booths, he together with the kings, the 32 kings that were helping him. When the young men of the princes of the jurisdictional districts came out first, Ben-Hadad at once sent out, and they came telling him, saying, there are men that have come out from Samaria. At that he said, whether it is for peace that they have come out, you should seize them alive, or whether it is for battle that they have come out, alive is how you should seize them. And these were the ones that came out from the city, the young men of the princes of the jurisdictional districts, and the military forces that were behind them. And they began to strike down, each one his man, and the Syrians took to flight, and Israel went in pursuit of them. But Ben-Hadad, the king of Syria, got to escape upon a horse together with the horsemen. But the king of Israel went out and kept striking down the horses and the chariots, and he struck down the Syrians with a great slaughter. Later the prophet approached the king of Israel and said to him, go, strengthen yourself and take note and see what you are going to do. For at the return of the year, the king of Syria is coming up against you. This is the prophet in Israel who was talking to King Ahab. As for the servants of the king of Syria, they said to Ben-Hadad, their God is a God of mountains. That is why they proved stronger than we were. So on the other hand, let us fight against them on the level land and see whether we shall not prove stronger than they are. And do this thing, remove the kings each one from his place and put in governors instead of them. As for you, you should number a military force for yourself equal to the military force that fell from your side, with horse for horse and chariot for chariot, and let us fight against them on the level land and see whether we shall not prove stronger than they are. They're doing some kind of experiment with the same number of men, seeing if they can be stronger on the level land. Accordingly, he listened to their voice and did just that way. You know, I mean, it's like with your health. Science is not important when it comes to your health. You want to take all the vitamins. You don't want to say, I'm going to do an experiment to see if vitamin C will cure all my disease. No, you take all the vitamins, including vitamin C. Forget the experiment. It's not important. What's important is that you get your health, just like in this case, it would have been better for him to win the battle rather than try and do an experiment. Verse 26, and it came about at the return of the year that Ben-Hadad proceeded to muster the Syrians and to go up to Aphek for battle against Israel. So it did happen according to what the prophet said. As for the sons of Israel, they were mustered and supplied and began to go out to meet them. And the sons of Israel went into camp in front of them like two tiny flocks of goats, while the Syrians, for their part, filled the earth. Then the man of the true God approached and said to the king of Israel, yes, he went on to say, this is what Jehovah has said. For the reason that the Syrians have said, Jehovah is a God of mountains and he is not a God of low plains, I shall have to give all this great crowd into your hand. You men will certainly know that I am Jehovah. And they continued and camped for 7 days, these in front of those. So just because the Israelites were not faithful to Jehovah didn't mean that they didn't worship Jehovah, or that they didn't in some way know who Jehovah was. They were familiar with the name Jehovah, certainly, but they weren't worshiping him, of course, not in the proper way, so they didn't have any right to ask for Jehovah's help, but here he was actually helping them. And they continued in camp for 7 days, these in front of those, and it came about on the seventh day that the engagement in battle began, and the sons of Israel went striking down the Syrians, 100,000 men on foot in one day, and those that were left went fleeing to Aphek, to the city. And the wall came falling down upon 27,000 men that were left. As for Ben-Hadad, he fled and finally came into the city, into the innermost chamber. So his servant said to him, here now, We have heard that the kings of the house of Israel are kings of loving kindness. Please let us carry sackcloth upon our loins and ropes upon our heads, and let us go out to the king of Israel. They were trying to take advantage of the loving kindness of the king of Israel. Perhaps he will preserve your soul alive. Accordingly, they girded sackcloth about their loins with ropes upon their heads and came in to the king of Israel and said, "Your servant Ben-Hadad has said, please let my soul live." To this he said, "Is he still alive? He is my brother." So the men themselves took it as an omen and quickly took it as a decision of his own accord. They went on to say, "Ben-Hadad is your brother." At that he said, "Come, fetch him." Then Ben-Hadad went out to him, and he at once had him get up into the chariot. Ben-Hadad now said to him, "The cities that my father took from your father, I shall return, and streets you will assign to yourself in Damascus, the same as my father assigned in Samaria. And as for me, in a covenant I shall send you away." With that he concluded a covenant with him and sent him away. And a certain man of the sons of the prophets said to his friend, "By the word of Jehovah, strike me, please." But the man refused to strike him. Therefore he said to him, "For the reason that you did not listen to the voice of Jehovah, here you are going away from me, and a lion will certainly strike you down." After that he went away from beside him, and the lion got to find him and strike him down. And he went on to find another man and to say, "Strike me, please." So the man struck him, striking and wounding. Then the prophet went and stood still for the king by the road, and he kept himself disguised with a bandage over his eyes. And it came about that as the king was passing by, he cried out to the king and proceeded to say, "Your servant himself went out into the thick of the battle, and look, a man was leaving the line, and he came bringing a man to me, and then said, 'Guard this man. If he should in any way be missing, your soul will also have to take the place of his soul, or else a talent of silver you will weigh out.' And it came about that as your servant was active here and there, why, he himself was gone." At this the king of Israel said to him, "Thus your own judgment is. You yourself have decided." Upon that he hurriedly removed the bandage from over his eyes, and the king of Israel got to recognize him, that he was from the prophets. He now said to him, "This is what Jehovah has said. For the reason that you have let go out of your hand the man devoted to me for destruction, your soul must take the place of his soul, and your people the place of his people." At that the king of Israel went on his way toward his house, sullen and dejected, and came to Samaria. That's the end of 1 Kings 20. So that was a prophetic statement and illustration and fulfillment, or the response by the king of Israel, rather, was prophetic in that he pronounced judgment upon himself and upon Israel, and they were going to be judged in such a way as to take the place of the Syrians, and they would be punished, and they would lose their lives, ultimately, is what that meant, or they would lose their place of their power. You know, Samaria, they lost it eventually to the Assyrian army in the year, in our chronology, of 719 BCE. Now we're coming to our reading in Ezekiel 22. "And the word of Jehovah continued to occur to me, saying, 'And as for you, O son of man, will you judge? Will you judge the blood-guilty city and certainly cause her to know all her detestable things? And you must say, this is what the sovereign Lord Jehovah has said: O city that is shedding blood in her midst till her time comes, and that has made dungy idols within herself in order to become unclean, by your blood that you have shed, you have become guilty, and by your dungy idols that you have made, you have become unclean. And you bring your days near, and you will come to your years. That is why I must make you an object of reproach to the nations, and of jeering to all the lands nearby and those far away from you will jeer you. O you unclean in name, abounding in confusion, look, the chieftains of Israel have proved to be in you, each one given over to his arm for the purpose of shedding blood. father and mother they have treated with contempt in you, toward the alien resident they have acted with defrauding in the midst of you. Fatherless boy and widow they have maltreated in you, Ezekiel writes, little children. My holy places you have despised, and my Sabbaths you have profaned. Outright slanderers have proved to be in you for the purpose of shedding blood, and on the mountains they have eaten in you. Loose conduct they have carried on in the midst of you. The nakedness of a father they have uncovered in you. A woman unclean in her menstruation they have humiliated in you. And with the wife of his companion, a man has done a detestable thing. And his own daughter-in-law, a man has defiled with loose conduct. And his sister, the daughter of his own father, a man has humiliated in you. A bribe they have taken in you for the purpose of shedding blood. Interest and usury you have taken. And you violently keep making gain of your companions with defrauding. And me you have forgotten is the utterance of the sovereign Lord Jehovah. And look, I have struck my hand at your unjust gain that you have made, and over your acts of bloodshed that have proved to be in the midst of you. Will your heart keep enduring, or your hands furnish strength in the days when I am taking action toward you? I myself, Jehovah, have spoken, and I will take action. And I will scatter you among the nations, and disperse you among the lands, and I will destroy your uncleanness out of you. And you will certainly be profaned within yourself before the eyes of the nations, and you will have to know that I am Jehovah. And the word of Jehovah continued to come to me, saying, Son of man, to me those of the house of Israel have become as scummy dross. All of them are copper and tin and iron and lead in the midst of a furnace, much scummy dross. I need to check what my hard drive space is here. Do I have any room on this drive? Yeah, I seem to have enough. Good. Plenty. Therefore, this is what the Sovereign Lord Jehovah has said, verse 19. For the reason that all of you have become as much scummy dross, therefore here I am collecting you together into the midst of Jerusalem, as in collecting silver and copper and iron and lead and tin into the midst of a furnace, in order to blow upon it with fire to cause a liquefying, so I shall collect them together in my anger and in my rage, and I will blow and cause you people to liquefy. And I will bring you together and blow upon you with the fire of my fury, and you will be liquefied in the midst of her. As in the liquefying of silver in the midst of a furnace, so you people will be liquefied in the midst of her. And you will have to know that I myself, Jehovah, have poured out my rage upon you. And the word of Jehovah continued to come to me, saying, Son of man, say to her, you are a land not being cleansed, one not rained down upon in the day of denunciation. There is a conspiracy of her prophets in the midst of her, like the roaring lion tearing prey. A soul they actually devour. Treasure and precious things they keep taking. Her widows they have multiplied in the midst of her. Her priests themselves have done violence to my law, and they keep profaning my holy places. Between the holy thing and the common they have made no distinction, and between the unclean thing and the clean they have made nothing known. And from my Sabbaths they have hidden their eyes, and I am profaned in the midst of them. Her princes, in the midst of her, are like wolves tearing prey and shedding blood, in destroying souls for the purpose of making unjust gain. And her prophets are plastered for them with whitewash, visioning an unreality and divining for them a lie, saying, This is what the Sovereign Lord Jehovah has said, when Jehovah himself has not spoken. The people of the land themselves have carried on a scheme of defrauding, and have done a tearing away in robbery, and the afflicted one and the poor one they have maltreated, and the alien resident they have defrauded without justice. And I kept looking for a man among them who would be repairing the stone wall and standing in the gap before me in behalf of the land, in order for me not to bring it to ruin. There's an illustration there of standing in the gap. You know, a man who would defend the city to prevent it being brought to ruin. And I found no one. So I shall pour out my denunciation upon them. With the fire of my fury I will exterminate them. Their way I will bring upon their own head, is the utterance of the Sovereign Lord Jehovah. And that's the end of Ezekiel chapter 22. So we can see how these are, many of these things are not illustrations, but it's not as though the wall of Jerusalem had a gap in it. At this point there was no gap, but it's an illustration to say there's a gap, because they were leaving themselves wide open to being judged by Jehovah by the wrongdoing that they were practicing. And those acts of wrongdoing were not illustrations. They were actual an actual list of deeds of wrongdoing that they were doing in Jerusalem. Now, Revelation chapter 14. Revelation, John writes, and in the vision that he was given, and the book of Revelation that he wrote, chapter 14, and I saw, and look, the Lamb standing upon the Mount Zion, and with him 144,000, having his name and the name of his Father written on their foreheads. And I heard a sound out of heaven, as the sound of many waters, and as the sound of loud thunder. And the sound that I heard was as of singers who accompany themselves on the harp, playing on their harps. And they are singing as if a new song before the throne and before the four living creatures and the elders. And no one was able to master that song but the 144,000 who have been bought from the earth. These are the ones that did not defile themselves with women. In fact, they are virgins. These are the ones that keep following the Lamb no matter where he goes. These were bought from among mankind as first fruits to God and to the Lamb, and no falsehood was found in their mouths. They are without blemish. And I saw another angel flying in mid-heaven, and he had everlasting good news to declare as glad tidings to those who dwell on the earth, and to every nation and tribe and tongue and people, saying in a loud voice, "Fear God and give him glory, because the hour of the judgment by him has arrived, and so worship the one who made the heaven and the earth and sea and fountains of waters." And another, a second angel, followed, saying, "She has fallen. Babylon the Great has fallen. She who made all the nations drink of the wine of the anger of her fornication." And another angel, a third, followed them, saying in a loud voice, "If anyone worships the wild beast and its image and receives a mark on his forehead or upon his hand, he will also drink of the wine of the anger of God that is poured out undiluted into the cup of his wrath. And he shall be tormented with fire and sulfur in the sight of the holy angels and in the sight of the Lamb. And the smoke of their torment ascends forever and ever. And day and night they have no rest, those who worship the wild beast and its image, and whoever receives the mark of its name." Here is where it means endurance for the holy ones, those who observe the commandments of God and the faith of Jesus. And I heard a voice out of heaven say, "Write, happy are the dead who die in union with the Lord from this time onward. Yes, says the Spirit, let them rest from their labors, for the things they did go right with them." And I saw, and look, a white cloud, and upon the cloud someone seated like a son of man with a golden crown on his head and a sharp sickle in his hand. And another angel emerged from the temple sanctuary, crying with a loud voice to the one seated on the cloud, "Put your sickle in and reap, because the hour has come to reap, for the harvest of the earth is thoroughly ripe." And the one seated on the cloud thrust in his sickle on the earth, and the earth was reaped. And still another angel emerged from the temple sanctuary that is in heaven, he too having a sharp sickle. And still another angel emerged from the altar, and he had authority over the fire. And he called out with a loud voice to the one that had the sharp sickle, saying, "Put your sharp sickle in and gather the clusters of the vine of the earth, because its grapes have become ripe." And the angel thrust his sickle into the earth and gathered the vine of the earth, and he hurled it into the great winepress of the anger of God. And the winepress was trodden outside the city, and blood came out of the winepress as high up as the bridles of the horses, for a distance of 1,600 furlongs. That's the end of Revelation 14. I had an itchy nose for quite a while there, and I had to suppress the urge to scratch, but it was really, really itchy. So what time is it? Oh yeah, we've got a few minutes. Got about 3 minutes and some seconds now. What was I saying? Oh yeah, I just realized. I wondered if I even set this correctly. I never set the paragraph correctly. So just to give you a visual of what the paragraph in the article said, let's go down to 411 again. I went too far, just a minute here. Let's go down 411. Here it is. So this is what 411 looked like. I should have had it framed so that it could be read. Now you can get a screenshot of it if you need one for any reason. There it is. So that was the paragraph we read today in the Crucible of Credible Creed. So it's remarkable, isn't it, that that the military pharaoh would be the one who chased after Moses and the Israelites when they were departing Egypt. It was in his nature to be military and to lead an attacking force. It doesn't sound, at least at all, out of character for Thutmose I. So that the idea that he was the Pharaoh of the Exodus fits very well, doesn't it? I mean, so that's another, there are just, you know, pieces of evidence, bits of evidence, and that's another one of those bits of evidence that show that he was the Pharaoh of the Exodus. But in the article True, there's another discussion about his name, his throne name, comparing it with the name of the Pharaoh of the Exodus in Jewish tradition, Nenephrius or Kenephrius. In according to Artapanus, in Jewish tradition, there was a story about the Pharaoh of the Exodus that gave the name of the Pharaoh as Kenephrius, but the Kenephrius part was an emendation or a wrong alteration of the name from it was originally Nenephrius, is what we found out from our research. So Nenephrius, and because the double N is in Egyptian, it's a lot like the M, because the double N, it looks like the M for one thing in our language, but it means in Nun was to do with the abyss in Egyptian mythology. And the letter M had to do with also with water. They were both to do with water. So the M and the double N and the M are interchangeable in a sense, so that the Nephrius can be Mephrius, and Mephrius corresponds to the throne name of Thutmose the First, who's called Mephrius or Mephres and things like that in the Egyptian dynasties of Manetho. The names of the pharaohs were given by Manetho, and Mephrius, Mephrius, Mephres. This was the name of Thutmose the First, according to Manetho. So the Nenephrius name fits with Mephres. So even that way, we have another piece of strong evidence in that case, perhaps, although it's just from the tradition of certain Jewish ancient historians. That's it for today's study. But it's the evidence that we're looking for, right? Is what we're finding, if we can positively identify the Pharaoh of the Exodus, which no one else, whom no one else has identified, no one, just us. So it's January 14th, 2024 of the Common Era. Hope I said the right date, the right year at the beginning. 1957 hours Eastern Standard Time. 1957 was the year I was born, and the year in the BC years when Judah was born, interestingly, in our chronology. Also, I love you. I'm Ward Green. In my behalf, this is Gully, and this is Cassie saying bye for now.